From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch, and thank you, Victoria Marshall, for the information, the news from the FRC News Desk, Washington Watch News Desk. We appreciate that very much. I'm your host today, your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and delighted to be with you this afternoon. We've got a lot coming your way on this edition of Washington Watch. First of all, more outrage from Republicans and even some Democrats over President Biden's threat to withhold military aid from Israel if it invades Rafah in pursuit of Hamas fighters.
I don't know if Joe Biden's forgotten about it, but a terrorist organization backed by Iran, known as Hamas, invaded Israel, murdered, brutally murdered Israelis. It's still holding over 130 hostages, including American citizens. Where is Joe Biden standing up to Hamas? He seems to want to go after Israel every single day and turn his back on our strongest ally in the Middle East.
Well said. That was House Majority Leader Steve Scalise this morning on Fox and Friends. And despite growing opposition, the Biden administration has literally doubled down on the decision from the president to withhold the weapons. This is, of course, going to limit Israel to half measures, and that's an inadequate position for any kind of winning strategy with the war against Hamas.
We will always be committed to Israel's security. We will always be committed to helping Israel defend itself against Hamas, Hezbollah, the threat from Iran, the threat from other terrorist groups and malign actors. But when we look at a potential operation in Rafah, the president made clear that we are not going to provide them certain weapons that they could use in such an operation.
Oh, yeah, we're going to help them. But we're all for them. But, wow, that was State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller yesterday. So many people are asking if the Biden administration's has literally double-crossed Congress when pushing for the recent foreign aid spending supplemental. I'll be talking here in just a little while with Texas Congressman Nathaniel Moran. He's a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee about this and more. And this week, a federal court delivered a landmark win for religious liberties when it ruled that a Catholic school in North Carolina has the right to hire only faculty and staff who observe Catholic teachings and principles. Fantastic decision. The Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty represented the Diocese of Charlotte in this case, and their attorney, Nick Reeves, will be joining me to explain what this victory means for religious liberties. And as we shared earlier this week, the Boy Scouts will now identify themselves as Scouting America instead of the Boy Scouts. And this recent transition has many wondering if the organization has gone woke. Well, in reality, anyone who has been paying attention knows that the Scouts have long been a shell of their former self. And this latest move only confirms what many of us already had observed. But fortunately, there is a Christian alternative to Scouting America. And this is all coming about as a growing popularity. More parents are just seeking positive outlets, Christian outlets, for their boys. And I'll be joined later in the program by John Stemberger, who is the board chairman emeritus of this organization called Trail Life USA. And as we step back and consider the Boy Scouts' drift from their original mission in light of what's happening more broadly in cultural trends, what does all of this tell us? What does it say about the current world's thinking on masculinity in general? And how this is not only hurting boys, but girls also? Dr. Owen Strand, senior fellow at FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview, and the author of the book, The War on Men, will be joining me for that discussion in our weekly Worldview segment. And just by way of reminder, let me say this. The World Health Assembly, which is going to be meeting later this month, time is running out if you want to tell Washington to not let the Biden administration cede our authority to the World Health Organization. You still have a little bit of time to do so, and if you'd like to, I encourage you to text the word WHO. Of course, that stands for World Health Organization. Text the word WHO to 67742, or you can visit frcaction.org who. So we've got a lot coming your way on this program. You don't want to miss a bit of it. Our website, of course, is tonyperkins.com. There's a lot of resources there for you, including archive programs and even this one, if you happen to miss any of it. So let's jump into the program for today. All right, the Biden administration's incoherent, and I will use that word again, the Biden administration's incoherent decision to withhold munitions from Israel as it is pursuing its war against Hamas continues to draw a lot of outrage from members of Congress. And by the way, this is all coming at a time when the IDF literally exchanged gunfire with Hamas fighters today in the city of Rafah. And the Israeli Air Force, by the way, bombarded Hamas rocket launching sites as well. So a lot is happening right now as we speak. And as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his war cabinet pivot to pursuing their war against Hamas with only conditional U.S. support, what can we expect in the coming days? Well, joining me to discuss this and more is Congressman Nathaniel Moran. He serves on three House committees, including the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Committee on Education and Workforce. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Moran, welcome back to the program. Great to see you.
Jody, great to be here with you on Washington Watch. Thank you for having me on this Friday.
Well, it's always our honor to have you for sure. Let's begin just with your reaction to President Biden's announcement this week.
Yeah, you use the word incoherent, and I think you're right. You can also say he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. He says he wants to be a good friend to Israel and that he's behind Israel 100%. And you heard his State Department spokesman say, we are committed to Israel's security. And the talk is there, but the talk is cheap because the walk does not follow. What we're seeing immediately after those words is actions to undercut our allies, actions to take back the very support that we just approved in Congress, and actions effectively, when you talk about the analogy of having a fighter on the ropes, when you need to put them on the ground, and that's what we need to do with Hamas. We need to, now that we have them on the ropes, finish the job that, that was started with the Israeli IDF. And at that very moment, what we're asking Israel to do is to tie one hand behind their back and to not fight with all their might. And that's not what we need this time. We need to be supporting our ally, our very strongest ally, instead of undercutting them.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great word picture. We're calling on them to tie one hand behind their back and then say, go fight. Yeah, the comment that we played earlier, you just referenced it, by the State Department spokesman, essentially it seems like he's saying that the U.S. will support Israel's defense, but not offense. I mean, is that somehow the way he's viewing U.S. commitment to Israel?
I think that's a great way to describe it. And really, you can go back to a sports analogy. In this case, if you're going to win the game, you have to play both offense and defense. And we have to have that strategy across the world against these growing totalitarian regimes that want to do the West harm, want to do us harm, and our allies like Israel. We can't simply confine ourselves and say, we're going to wait until you do us harm on our border. No, we've got to project strength outside and say, we are going to come after you and we are going to stop you before we get here. I told folks a couple weeks ago, I'm all for the full court press defense. We want to press and provide defense before the enemy gets across midcourt, before they even have a chance to score against us. And then we want to play tough defense when they get here, but we want to start it on the other side of the court and play full court, full press defense.
Yeah, and we've got to have both here. The Biden administration seems to, like you said, be speaking out of both sides of their mouth, but they are really micromanaging, it looks to me like, what Israel can do. I want to play another remark here that the State Department spokesman also made here. Play clip 5 for me, please.
We continue, and I should say, we do continue to engage with them about other options that they can pursue. We have presented a full range of other policy choices that they can make that we think would achieve the goal of dismantling Hamas and choking off the Hamas battalions that remain in Rafah without further endangering civilians there.
Micromanaging? I mean, does anyone honestly think that the Biden administration knows better how to deal with this war than does Israel?
No, they absolutely do not. And we should not be telling our allies how to strategically go about their defense and their offense that they need to engage in, when I think maybe the objective of the Biden administration is much different than the objective of Israel. I think the objective of the Biden administration may be to cave to college radicals, maybe to cave to leftists in Michigan, maybe to cave to sympathetic individuals in the administration that want to promote an idea that maybe Iran needs to be supported in a way that we don't think should be supported. I think there's some Iran sympathizers in the Biden administration that need to be outed and gutted. We need to be standing strong with Israel right now instead of telling them how to go about their objective. And frankly, without redefining the objective, because in my mind, this is politically motivated by the Biden administration during this political year. Here domestically, pressured by things domestically to change what Israel is doing there on the front. And that should not be the case.
It certainly shouldn't. How shameful if that is the reality of what's going on, where our administration is trying to dictate the safety of another country because of political purposes here. I want to play one more clip for you here. This is Senator Lindsey Graham, what he had to say during a press conference yesterday. I'd like to get your reaction to this.
Israel's being asked to turn the war fighting over to the United States. Let us plan how to do this, not you. That is a huge mistake. Number one, I trust Israel more than I trust Austin.
Your thoughts?
Boy, don't you know it. We should trust Israel with its own defense. It has, and its own offense. It has so much more on the line in this battle with Hamas than we do. We are next in line if Hamas is not eradicated in this engagement. We know the last four stronghold battalions are there in Rafah. Israel has gone beyond where most countries that are engaged in a battle will do. They've said, hey, look, if you're a civilian, evacuate this area. We want to give you a heads up. I mean, who does that? Who tells the enemy where they're going to go and what they're going to do beforehand? But Israel's done that for humanitarian purposes. They've done a lot to make sure that civilians are out of harm's way. Hamas is the one putting them in harm's way. But the truth is, we know the stronghold of what remains in Hamas, a terrorist organization that committed unspeakable acts in October 7th and after. They need to be eradicated. Now is the time to do it. Now is the time to show strength instead of holding back our ally.
All right, just a few seconds left. I just want to have your answer to this. Do you believe the Biden administration double-crossed Congress on all of this, the money to Ukraine and Israel, and now they're not doing it? Was that double-crossing?
Well, I think they're certainly misusing this ability to provide arms as a tactic to get Israel to do what the administration wants it to do. And they have not acted in good faith, neither with Congress or with Israel. And they need to correct
that. American people.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Congressman Nathaniel Moran. Always great to have you. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining us. All right, friends, after the break, a federal appeals court delivered a significant win for religious liberty this week. We'll talk about it right after the break. Some more Washington Watch coming your way. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, this week we had a landmark religious freedom case. A federal appeals court ruled that a Catholic school has the right to hire only individuals who live by its religious principles. There was a former substitute teacher who had sued the Diocese of Charlotte after the Charlotte Catholic School declined to call him as a backup for substitute teaching once he posted on social media about his marriage to another man. And after a lower court allowed the lawsuit to proceed, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals reaffirmed the diocese's freedom to choose teachers who will uphold and help pass on the faith to the next generation. And joining me now to discuss this great decision is Nick Reeves. He's a counsel at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, which represented the Diocese of Charlotte in this case. Nick, welcome to Washington Watch.
Jody, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I tell you, this is a great reason to have you. Congratulations. What a tremendous victory. You've got to be extremely gratified, and the diocese as well, by this decision.
Absolutely. This is a great win for religious liberty, for the diocese. Their role is not just to provide an academic education to their students, but really to form them in the faith. And if they're not able to hire and retain teachers who will live out and pass on that faith to their students, then they're not able to really live out their religious mission. And I think this really goes back to a core principle the Supreme Court has recognized a few times, that churches have to be able to determine who is going to preach the faith and who's going to be able to pass the faith on to the next generation.
Wow, that is tremendous. Yeah, we cannot take away the First Amendment. I just say thank you for standing in the gap on this. It seems to me that essentially the court said the First Amendment requires civil courts to stay out of employment disputes involving ministers. So break that down for us. What does that mean when they say, in essence, stay out of this employment dispute involving ministers? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jody. They even use the word stay out in the opinion. I think what this means is it kind of boils down to the old adage that personnel is policy. So if a court or the government can come in and say, you have to hire this person or you can't fire this person to be a minister in your church or to teach religion to your students or to model that faith in the classroom, the government is stepping in and imposing its views about what is or isn't the correct doctrine, the correct religion. And that really entangles or kind of enmeshes the government in a religious question. And the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment says the government should not interfere in those choices. I think you have to think about what the alternative is. The alternative would be that courts could tell schools, they could tell churches who they have to hire and who they can fire. And that's just not how our country works.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it would seem to me, I'm just putting myself in the role of a parent. If I'm a parent here, is it fair to say that a parent who is sacrificing their hard-earned money to send their child or children to a Charlotte Catholic school in this case, those parents are considering all of these teachers are, in essence, ministers who are going to model and promote Catholic faith and morals, not just education, but this is an extension of the doctrines of the church.
That's absolutely right, and that's what the court recognized here. I think one of the lines from the opinion was something like, even if you're teaching Romeo and Juliet, you're still modeling and you're still doing it consistent with Catholic Church teachings. You don't have to be just teaching, religious doctrine to be a minister. Your role as a teacher at an elementary school, at a high school, is to lead your students in the faith. And in this opinion, they pointed to multiple things that the teachers here did, from starting class with prayer, taking their students to mass, and even integrating the faith into their classroom.
All right, so let's answer the question here. We're describing this as a huge religious victory, and it is religious liberty victory. But why? What kind of precedent is this setting for Christian schools and maybe other similar type organizations going forward?
So this is an issue the Supreme Court has weighed in on multiple times, and they've affirmed this doctrine. They've expanded it and applied it to Catholic school teachers before. But I think this is probably the broadest and the strongest formulation of that doctrine that we've seen coming out of any court. Basically, what the court here said is we're presumptively all Catholic school teachers, all religious school teachers are going to qualify as ministers because these schools consider it vital, as you were just saying, Jody, they consider it vital that all their teachers pass on the faith, model the faith, and that parents expect that. Parents wouldn't be sending their kids to these schools if they didn't think the school would be not just giving a good education, but actually teaching the Catholic faith.
So is that the element that was added in this case, this outcome that was not previously there, that the teachers fall into the category of ministers? Is that the issue here that magnifies the importance of this case decision?
I think that's absolutely right. I think before this decision, it was clear that people who were maybe directly teaching theology or who had a role in teaching the actual religion class at a school were covered. But here the court is saying, I think correctly, and recognizing that this is how it works on the ground in these schools every day, all teachers at Catholic schools, at other Christian schools, at Jewish schools, have that important responsibility. It's not just the religion teacher. It's anyone who's interacting with those students, modeling the faith, mentoring the students. They play a vital role in the community. And forcing these schools to hire or retain someone who is not modeling that faith would undermine the ability of these schools to help those parents pass on that faith.
We don't have time to go into it further, but do you expect an appeal on this, or is this the final decision?
We think this is going to be the final word, but we'll have to wait and see.
That's awesome. Thank you, Nick Reeves from the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberties. Man, fantastic job. Hats off to you. Great work. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thank you.
All right, friends, after the break, the Boy Scouts underwent a transition this week. They changed their name to match a change in priorities that had been taking place for years. We'll be talking about that and a Christian alternative as well. So stay tuned. Much more to cover right after the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you here with us. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and glad to be with you. All right, you may have heard the news by now that the Boy Scouts of America have undergone a transition. They're going to be identifying themselves now as Scouting America. And yep, it's all in the name of inclusivity. I wonder what their pronouns are now going to be. I mean, Z and Zer, or who knows? Oh, mercy. But this continues as the organization's decade-long drift from the values and virtues that it once celebrated disappear. And despite this sad reminder of what happens when a rudderless organization loses its direction, the Boy Scouts' decline has, on the other side, opened the door for more parents of boys to consider a Christian alternative. And joining me now to discuss this is John Stemberger. He's the president of Liberty Council Action, senior counsel at Liberty Council, and also the chairman of the board emeritus of Trail Life USA. John, welcome back to the program. Great to have you.
Jody, it's great to be with you again.
All right. Well, listen, before we discuss Trail Life, which I certainly want to do, give me your overall assessment of the Boy Scouts' decline overall.
Yeah, it's sad because what they've done is they've neutered the DNA of who they were as an organization. They were literally a boy-focused organization, and now they're just kind of a generic, plain vanilla, any young person can come here, gay, trans, girl, it doesn't matter anymore. So they basically destroyed the essence of who they were. And it's funny because they changed their name originally from Boy Scouts to Scouts BSA so that the girls initially would feel more comfortable joining these local troops. Now the B apparently in BSA was even too offensive for them. So now they've changed that from Scouts BSA to Scouting America somehow to not offend anyone in the program and to say that all can come. But it's just basically transformed it into a kind of a youth group with neckerchiefs without any core meaning. This used to be a program where boys could learn how to become men and learn manly skills in an outdoor camping environment. Those days are gone. Most of these troops are run by women now, and it doesn't have the same kind of Norman Rockwell, you know, classic, iconic, masculine sense to it when you get right involved with these troops.
Yeah, you look at all the incredible leaders over the years that the Boy Scouts have helped create. And in essence, all of that's erased. It's all tossed out the window at this point. And like you said, it's just sad. It is so sad to watch this. you know, you look at this and people say, John, this is the Boy Scouts have gone woke. It could be in this case, could it not, that there's more than that going on? I mean, here's an organization that's lost its way.
Well, the real tragedy here, and no one's talking about this, all these changes are producing more boy-on-boy and now girl-on-boy sexual contact. I mean, that's exactly what's happening here, because they do not separate out kids that claim to be openly gay. I mean, we don't tent boys and girls for a reason, because they're attracted to each other. But yet they're going to allow an openly gay boy to decide who he's going to unilaterally sleep with on his own. And this absolutely creates a radical increase of boy-on-boy contact issues that are very hard to prevent, much less report, unlike adults. Even at the World Jamboree just a couple of years ago in West Virginia, they had a requirement to readily hand out condoms all throughout the campground with as girls there as young as 14 years of age. Now imagine that. And even alcohol was served in some venues. This is a youth group, a World Jamboree from the Boy Scouts of America. This is insanity that they're doing this, but this is exactly what's happening. It's a scandal. No church, and there's still Baptist churches sponsoring Boy Scout troops, still PCA Presbyterian churches. They need to stop this immediately. This is a risk to these young people. Scouting is not just in your troop. It's a collective. You go to Order of the Arrow, you go to Jamboree meetings, you go to local Camperee meetings. So you are going to definitely interact with other young people in the program. So we need to be concerned with our young people and promote instead Trail Life USA, the Christian scouting movement that's really growing rapidly because of the nonsense going on with the Boy Scouts.
Wow. You just shared some information that I and I'm sure many of our viewers and listeners had no idea that was taking place in the former Boy Scouts, an organization that's totally lost its purpose and its focus. How do you think this fits in the overall societal shift away from encouraging boys to celebrate biblical masculinity and just biblical purity as a whole?
Well, we've seen many institutions cave, Jody, and this Boy Scouts is not, and it's sad that they didn't have the courage to stand up and be brave, right, and actually defend their own values. They had a Supreme Court victory that said you can exclude anybody who you want to. And so the Dale decision was very clear, and they basically destroyed that the precedent from that decision by not doing that. And so they've settled over 82,000 lawsuits from adults now who were boys back then, who were molested by adult leaders back in the day, $2.4 billion in a trust fund to settle all these cases. And yet it's still going on because they're basically allowing openly gay young men who are attracted to other boys to camp with other boys. And then they're putting girls in there, too. The girls are supposed to be separate, but you know that's not going to be enforced and regulated the way it ought to be. So this is a very sad thing. Folks need to put their kids in Trail Life USA. There's 1,200 troops in all 50 states. Churches are sponsoring these groups, and it's a remarkable Christian scouting program.
It is, John. And if you'll hold on after the break, I want to come back. I want to talk about Trail Life USA for a few more moments. I want people to understand what this new Christian organization, somewhat new, this alternative Christian organization is all about. And I'd like for you to explain it to us. So if you would hang on just a few more minutes, I want to get to that. Yeah. All right, friends, I'll tell you, this is an incredible discussion right here. Boy Scouts turning themselves upside down on what they have always stood for in the men that they were creating, but there is an alternative. Trail Life USA will be back to discuss more of that right after the break, so stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Hi, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm glad to have you, and I'm in a conversation now with John Stenberger. He's the president of Liberty Counsel Action, as well as senior counsel at Liberty Action, and also the chairman of the board emeritus of Trail Life USA. John, thank you for holding over the break. I appreciate it a great deal. All right, so break down Trail Life USA for us. What is Trail Life USA?
So 10 years ago, when the Boy Scouts of America were making their changes and their membership changes to allow openly gay boys to express themselves and be with other boys, there was hundreds of us around the country. I led a group to try to first stop the change. Tony Perkins was very involved, as well as FRC, AFA, pro-family groups all over the country. We're trying to get the Boy Scouts to not make the change to this iconic, classic organization. But unfortunately, they was a setup. They had all the professionals voting at the conference, and they passed it. So as a result of that, 10 years ago, we founded Trail Life USA. It's a Christian scouting movement based out of evangelical churches and Catholic churches all over the country. Over 1,200 troops in all 50 states. Really, it's really successful. And if you want, I tell you what, this program I'll put it up against, and no slight on sports, but I'll put it up against soccer, football, in terms of character building, leadership, men becoming men, learning what it means to be a man. And that's the other thing is we and the Boy Scouts, older women can run the whole program. And our program is very, very simple. You have to have a man there because our conviction is that you have to learn how to be a man from another man, right? It's a pretty simple concept. But for a father to come in and have other men around them reinforcing what he's saying, it's just remarkable. My two sons have both been through Trail Life. They're both Freedom Award winners. And I can tell you the change that they've seen in their lives in terms of leadership, the confidence, the skills that they have is remarkable as a result of Trail Life USA. There's nothing like it. You can find troops all over the country. Just go to traillifeusa.com, traillifeusa.org. Either of those things will take you to them. You can look at the map. There's troops all over, or you can start your own troop if you have a handful of men that want to do that around the country.
All right, traillifeusa.com or .org, traillifeusa. And you touched on it. I want to hit on this, and then I got to let you go, John. But how can a parent or grandparent pursue starting a Trail Life USA ministry at their church?
Yeah, so we're high speed, low drag. Everything is online. There's really not that much paper at all, except for the manual itself. So we've basically made everything online. It's very easy. There's $100 you can get with a kit that's got a handbook and all kinds of materials to start the troop with for $99. But to really start it, you need about three men at a very minimum, and then maybe one or two women can serve as the treasurers or but the people that are directly operating the program for those boys need to be men. And so online, you can do that, traillifeusa.com, traillifeusa.com. You can get all the information on how to start a troop there.
John Stenberger, thank you so much for your leadership. Thank you for Trail Life USA, an alternative to Scouting America. God bless you. We appreciate it so much. Thanks for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, as I get ready to bring my next guest in, let me just say this by way of reminder real quickly. As you all know, we all know, the Biden administration's support for Israel continues to falter, and therefore it is imperative for Christians to stand with and to pray for Israel. And here at FRC, we are calling on believers to commit to praying for and standing with Israel. And specifically, we're calling on Bible-believing churches to do so collectively on Sunday, May 19th. So just not this week, but the following Sunday. We're asking churches to dedicate a portion of their worship services to pray for Israel's peace, their prosperity, and their protection. And you can learn more about this pledge. Just go to prayandstand.com, prayandstand.com to learn more. Or if you prefer, you can simply text the word Israel to 67742. Please join us and pray for Israel. All right, you heard me speak just a few moments ago with John Stenberger about the Boy Scouts and our culture's obsession with singling out what is often called toxic masculinity. Of course, this is sending a confusing and misleading message to young men. And it's just a violation of what God intended these men, young men, to be. We saw an example of this week, how the Biden administration's radical rewrite of Title IX rules in the name of inclusion stirs up all sorts of confusion and harms both men and women. Let me play this quick clip before I bring on my next guest. This is Utah Congressman Burgess Owens confronting the Biden administration's education secretary, Secretary Cordona, earlier this week.
There's a Cherokee proverb that says, a man's highest calling is to protect women, so she is free to walk the earth unharmed. I'll say this, Mr. Secretary, before I go on to this next topic. With all due respect, I pray that our country will never, ever have the vision that your policies are now driving us toward in terms of manhood. It's a vision that teaches our boys that harming girls is no big deal.
Wow. Dr. Owen Strand, he's a senior fellow at the Center for Biblical Worldview here at FRC, and he's also the provost and research professor of theology at Grace Bible Theological Seminary. He's also the president of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, as well as the author of many books, including The War on Man. Owen, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you so much, Jody. Thank you for having me back.
Well, listen, this is right down your alley, and I don't know of anyone that can break this down any better for us. You, I'm sure, heard at least a portion of my conversation with John Stenberger just a few moments ago, and you have been studying this topic for years. How have you seen the war on men and boys play out in our culture in recent decades?
Well, I think what you said is really the exemplar of the war that is going on all around us. I started my book, The War on Men, which came out last fall, with that sentence, masculinity is toxic. I wasn't arguing that myself, Jody, because masculinity is not toxic. Masculinity is made by God and is designed for his glory. Every man, of course, needs the gospel of divine grace to live and flourish as a man as God intends. But nonetheless, like womanhood, masculinity or manhood is God designed. Today, however, boys are penalized. They're put in the penalty box for being boys. There are all sorts of traits that are associated with good things in scripture that in today's culture among woke, leftist, pagan thought are very bad things. So if you take risks today, if you're assertive, if you speak up in groups, if you might dare to ever correct a woman in public or something like this, if you like competitive sports, if you like watching World War II movies, you better get out your blanket and hide in the closet because they're coming for you. And what we need to say in response to that is, yeah, every man needs to be tempered and changed and to grow. But fundamentally, it is not the case that womanhood is good and manhood is bad. That itself is a toxic idea.
Absolutely. Clearly, the Bible teaches both about masculinity and femininity. And for any teaching otherwise, you're right. That is the toxic issue. So I really don't know how to ask this question. I'm going to do the best I can. I think you'll hear what I'm trying to say, whether it comes out in proper articulation or not. But when young men don't follow God's design for them as men, are we really surprised that they may think that they would be better off as a woman? I mean, this whole cultural gender confusion, when we are stripping away masculinity, is this next step just kind of automatic? Should this not be a surprise that we're watching this transition phenomenon before us?
It's not a surprise. Fundamentally, every boy grows up wanting to be strong. No boy out there wants to be weak, but boys need a call to be strong, and boys need a structure and a system by which they can become strong, by which they can become like their dad. Any boy who has a father in the home, let's say a decent father, grows up looking at his dad, emulating his dad, watching his dad, and wanting to be like his dad. That's not something you have to push a button and start, Jody, as you know. That's just natural. That's wired into a boy. God wired it into a boy that he wants to grow up into a man, and he especially wants to be a strong man. If you teach boys today, as our culture does in so many different settings across the spectrum, that strength is bad, and especially that masculine strength is bad, of course, feminine strength isn't bad at all. But again, traditional masculine strength is bad, according to wokeness, according to paganism. What that means is that boys then lose the script. They now are against their nature. They're against their wiring because now they're being told, don't be what you naturally want to be. Now, of course, a Christian is going to say you're only going to be truly strong when you recognize your weakness and your need for Jesus Christ. But nonetheless, in scripture, in case after case, David to Solomon or the Lord God to Joshua, there's a call to courage and there's a call to strength. And that is what boys need. But when boys hear the opposite, when boys hear don't be strong and don't want to be a man, a traditional man or a biblical man, but you should actually want to be more inclusive and empathetic and kind and gentle. You know, you're not really good the way you are as a boy. You should be more like a girl. You should be more like a woman. When they hear that, yeah, what a shock when you couple that with radical gender ideology that a bunch of them today are turning to actually trying to become a woman in this society. Nothing could be worse for boys than that. What we need to do is call boys to become men and to give them a blueprint and a script and, God willing, a father in the home and a pastor in the church who points them to gospel-driven biblical manhood.
Wow. Extremely well said. Now, rather than protecting women, so much of this gender-confused ideology and men who are embracing that actually threaten women. I played a few moments ago, and I want to get a little bit deeper into this. I played a clip of Congressman Burgess Owens coming into this segment, but what preceded the clip that I played a few moments ago was this exchange. I want to get your reaction to these two clips here. Let's begin with clip 4.
If your daughter was reporting she felt uncomfortable in a boy's presence in a bathroom or locker room, would that be considered by your administration discrimination or bigotry?
As an educator for over 25 years...
You can't say yes or no to that?
Wow. All right, now, that's when he went on to say this. And this clip is a little bit long, but I think it's worth playing. So let's play clip 3, please.
There's a Cherokee proverb that says, a man's highest calling is to protect women. so she is free to walk the earth unharmed. I'll say this, Mr. Secretary, before I go on to this next topic. With all due respect, I pray that our country will never, ever have the vision that your policies are now driving us toward in terms of manhood. It's a vision that teaches our boys that harming girls is no big deal. I pray that we remain a country that produces overwhelmingly mass majorities of men who feel the way I do about my girls. I will give my life in a heartbeat for my girls. And the blessings I have is they have no doubts about that. There are millions of men and women across this country that do not have faith, do not have trust in you protecting our girls because of policies you can't say yes or no to. By the way, those are very, not very hard questions as a father. It's either yes or no.
Wow. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm tempted to quote the great philosopher Michael Scott of Office fame and use nonsense words in response to that terrible answer given by the Biden official. In reality, here's the thing. What Burgess Owens said there was exactly right, and that's the heartbeat of every father. It's not because of virtue within us, Jody. It's because of God's grace in us that summons us to wake up and to be not just a man for ourselves, not just an adult in terms of age, but to be a man who lays down his life for others to whatever extent is necessary. As a father of two girls, ages 10 and age 15, I can just tell you that's absolutely the beat of my heart. That's what we desperately need. We need men who have that conviction. Here's the thing, though. We don't just need men who would say that in public. That's exactly right to do. That was a great moment. But now we need men all across America, all across the West, beyond this country, to take action. We need men not just to step up in crisis situations, but we need men to go to school boards and public meetings and to run for office. And we need pastors to rally men in churches to stand up on behalf of their families. We need men to be protectors in the home, not just in those crisis moments in a Target restroom or whatever, but we need men to be protectors in all of life, not overweening protectors, but kind, gentle, loving, but strong as steel protectors. God, give us those kind of men today.
Absolutely. We've only got about a minute left. What can Christians do to counter the ways that the culture is emasculating men right now, young men?
Well, I talk about a bunch of these kind of things in my book, The War on Men, but I think the key is fathers. If you break fathers, you break the family. If you break the family, you break the society. If you build fathers, you build the family and you build the society. So what we need is a recovery of biblical fatherhood. What we need are men who are gripped by a vision of God the Father in Scripture, and then who are saved, trusting in the work of Jesus Christ and indwelt by the Holy Spirit. And then those men go to Scripture and they learn Old and New Testament about examples and teachings given to men. And then they pray like the wind to emulate that and walk that out and live that in a relationship primarily of love, but also of authority and strength and tenderness and gentleness and all the rest that the Bible teaches. That's what we need. We need godly fathers who step up and play their part.
Well said. Dr. Owen Strand, thank you so much for joining us again on Washington Watch. Always an honor to have you. We appreciate it a great deal. All right, friends, that wraps up another week of Washington Watch. I just want to encourage you going into this weekend to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the armor of God and be strong. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.